Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
I made a rule when I was racing. I'm not going to put myself in a position where my life is at risk, but in some situations I had to go beyond where that safety zone was in order to beat Michael Schumacher. Maybe when you don't have kids, it's easier to do it. I didn't want my kids to go through what I'd gone through with the loss of my dad.
Hello and welcome to the James Allen on F1 podcast brought to you by Autosport. F1 documentary films became mainstream after Asif Kapadia and Manish Pandey's Senna back in 2011. Drive to Survive turbocharged the genre over the last 7 years, and we've had a spate of docs on Schumacher, Mansell, Prost, and many others. F1 drivers make good subjects because they are so extreme. They're extraordinary people who do extraordinary things. But few have a story quite as Shakespearean in its narrative arc of family tragedy, longing, determination, and eventual vindication as 1996 world champion Damon Hill. A new documentary film launching on Sky on July the 3rd covers Damon's life from when his father, Graham Hill, was killed in a plane crash and his idyllic childhood was shattered, through to Damon finally winning the world title at the end of 1996. It's a story laced with bad luck, good luck, and a burning desire to put right what had gone wrong when his father died. What marks this film out for me is the rawness of the emotion in the storytelling, particularly from Damon himself and from his wife, Georgie, who plays a prominent role here, as she has done in Damon's life, and the way that it's all spliced together with some fantastic archive footage. Now, Sky Sports F1 presenter Simon Lazenby took on the challenge of telling Damon's story and brought the project to life with his production company. Simon, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, James. Kevin, brilliant. It's a pleasure to be here. And it's the end of a long journey, I'd say that. We started this back in 2018 in Montreal Airport. So it's good to see it finally coming to the screens. And we're hoping people are going to enjoy it. So, yeah, great to talk about it.
And Damon, it's always great to see you. Thanks for coming on.
But that brilliant introduction, thank you. I prefer to think of it as Homeric rather than Shakespearean. But, it has got a definite arc to it. And this is the true arc of human experience, is that, you know, we go out into the world and we fight dragons and then we come home.
So, you know, I was just going to pick up on it. I thought it was interesting you used the word Shakespearean there, James, because that's exactly as our director, Alex Holmes, described it. I mean, the way the narrative arc, as you said, is someone or a father that had absolutely everything. They lost everything. And then the son came back to reenact what the father did. And as you said, as sports stories go and sports movies go, that is kind of what you want from a story. And when we did talk about this in Montreal Airport after a couple of beers at the Canadian Grand Prix, we were talking about documentaries that we loved, and Senna was the one that was mentioned. And Damon just sort of chirped up, didn't he? You piped up with, you know, my story's a pretty good one. And it turned out that obviously it was. And when you get into it and all the nuance and everything that was thrown against him and the whole family, I think as storytellers, that's what drew us to it. And that's what's made us stick through it, because it's extremely difficult to get documentaries financed these days. And we had to battle hard against that. We had to battle hard against You know, there was a lot of legal stuff to get through as well, just to get it to the screen. So when the journey is as difficult for the filmmakers as, well, I put it in context, as difficult for the filmmakers as potentially it is for the subject, then it's great when you come out and you feel like at the other side of things that the story's been told correctly. And I think hopefully people will find that.
Can I come in on that there, James? Because I mean, it is literally, you know, it was an epic journey to get this thing to the screen so that people can see it. And I think that Simon has been incredible, and his team and Alex and his whole team have really worked hard and almost taken it on as a challenge themselves to make sure it got through to the finish line, because it seemed at times that it was never going to happen. And so anyway, it's great, and it's a testimony to Simon's determination as well, and it's also his ability to spot a story. So that's really what I've learned with Sky. We're working with them for 12 years, and with Simon, so is that they are interested in telling stories, and they're very good at picking out the stories. And as a journalist, you know yourself that is really what people are interested in. And there was something very interesting that Mark Stewart said once about the film he did about the last man on the moon, was that it wasn't about the individual, it's about the story. So this film is not about me as per se. It is a story which is told time and again by people, humans who have set themselves a task, or they've set themselves a challenge, and they're determined to get there. So I think that it's a brilliant. I mean, I wouldn't avoid the word masterpiece for me, because I've seen it. It's got me in more watches I've looked at it. I've actually felt amazed by the story, even though it was me doing it, and I'm just glad I don't have to do it again.
I did a thing with Alain Prost once, and we were looking back on his career. He's on stage with me in Paris at an FIA thing, and they showed the highlights reel of his career, and he said to me, I feel like I'm watching someone else's life. And I think that goes back to what I was saying at the introduction about the you know, and I've seen it close up, and particularly I was lucky enough to be close up with you throughout that whole journey as well. It was so extreme what you lived through, what Schumacher lived through, Mansell. Anyway, you guys are obviously professional talk, because here we are 5 minutes in. I haven't actually introduced also our other guest.
We're not going to let you get a question in, don't worry.
Who is? You tell Simon to pro, can't you? He's taking control from the start. Anyway, so joining me to talk through this is Autosport's Editor-in-Chief, Kevin Turner. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, everyone. Yes, now I'm very happy to play a backseat role in this, but I mean, I did find I thought the film was, you know, fascinating, insightful, and, you know, perhaps above all poignant, actually. So I'm very much looking forward to hearing from Simon and Damon on their thoughts and how it came together. So yeah, I can just interject occasionally, and I'll just listen to you guys the rest of the time.
We're all in the same business, Kevin. We know what you're up to, but we're very happy to divulge anything, because you know what is to hide. It's really interesting how people are very interested, and this is what the whole podcast thing is about. Really, it's a chance for people to hear about things really the way things really happen, and we feel kind of much more able to talk about it on a podcast. And so they're absolutely brilliant ways of discussing stuff which people are interested in getting behind the scenes. So let's go. I'm up for that.
Excellent. Well, listen, Damon, I remember you were always a fan of the great sports writer Simon Barnes in The Times. You're one of the deepest thinkers I think I've met as a driver, someone who really thinks about all kinds of aspects of human life. And having watched the film, I can understand a bit of where you're coming from on that. So it's always been clear to me that you appreciate good storytelling. And as you said before, you know, it is the essence of it. What I'm interested with this one is how you found the right perspective to tell your story at this particular point.
Well, I just handed it over to Simon, quite honestly. I mean, when you work with someone for a long time, you kind of trust that they understand. And he found Alex. So he said, this is a director I'm thinking of. And Alex Holmes, who has also done Greg LeMond and also Tracy Edwards. And, you know, he's got his storytelling technique is to make it personal. So I trusted both of them. And so I just stood back really and let them do what they wanted to do. I mean, I contributed insofar as I helped provide material to the film and also interviews and so forth. But it was very a light touch from me. I didn't want to have an influence on the way the story was told. because I think that's a big mistake. If you've got the subject saying, no, that's not how I want it to be told. I mean, there were a couple of times, I can't think, Simon will remind me, but very few times did I ever say, I don't like that or take that out.
What makes a good sports documentary, Simon?
That's quite a nuanced thing. I mean, our company did the McEnroe documentary, which was actually in the, we started our company because of the Damon film. And then in the time it took to get it made, we made one about John McEnroe. And we made one about the 2019 Cricket World Cup final. We've done one about Peter Schmeichel that's just gone out before this one. And we've got one about Jonah Lomu coming up. They're all very nuanced. And I don't think there's actually one method of telling anything. I think it really is just finding those that have had everything thrown at them. I mean, that's the essence of this one. It's an underdog story, right? And everybody, if you're British, you love an underdog. And I think that that was what Alex tried to lean into. And I cannot underestimate or cannot understate just how good a director he is and how good editor Cynthia Baldessari is. They work together, and I think that was one of the key things for this. What I think made this documentary slightly different and perhaps more special than some of the others that we've done is that we had a male-female combination in the edit suite, and we took the decision early on, despite having interviewed Patrick Head and Adrian Newey and Ross Brawn and Sir Jackie Stewart and Anne Bradshaw, to just tell it through the eyes of those that knew the story best, which were Georgie and Damon. And so I think that it's effectively, it's a love story and a family story set against the backdrop of Formula One. So I think the key, very long-winded way of saying, it's about the humans more than it is about the sport. The sport is the backdrop. And if it's a great sporting story as well as a family one, then you're in for a treat. And we were lucky enough to have both with this.
Yeah, we'll get on to the underdog topic because there's something quite interesting about that in a moment. But it's amazing as an F1 driver how much of your professional life was filmed. I mean, obviously the races are filmed, all the TV interviews, of which I did many, many with you throughout that period. But also it's that behind the scenes stuff, particularly, you know, around Senna's death, Imola 1994, there was so much behind the scenes material. It helped the filmmakers with Senna, but it must have felt really intrusive at the time, Damon. But it's absolute gold now for filmmakers today.
Well, I think that's the point, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of water has passed under the bridge since that time. And at the time, and it's true of today in many ways, is that the story is so hot, people in the centre of it can't really reveal at the time what's going on, because first of all, you don't have the perspective. Sometimes you don't even know what's going on. And secondly, it's too raw, you know, it's too potent, and it needs some of the dust to settle. So then it's possible to kind of see the, you know, the extent of the damage or whatever it is, you know. So I think that it takes a long time for you to process as a driver. So you stop. I stopped driving when I was 40, you know, so it's a long time ago that I stopped even. So I've had plenty of time to reflect, but I think it took, first of all, I wrote a book, which took a bit of a kind of deep, I had to hold my breath and jump in and go, okay, right, here goes, I'm going to go and review it all. And that was partly a book that I had to write because basically Sky were nicking all my good stories, and I thought I better get this down in the book, otherwise I'm not going to have anything left. I had to tell the story of the career. And actually, to be honest, I wasn't that interested in my career. I wanted to tell a different story. So in a way, the film has told part of that story, a big, big part of that story, and what it was, what the personal experience was. And, you know, you can't explain at the time. Yeah, I won this race or I didn't win this race, but do you know what's going on in the background at the moment is making it a little bit more stressful than than it might look on the screen. But so yeah, and you know, when he wants to hear excuses either. So I think it does take time, and I think that's the joy, if you like, of the era we're in at the moment, is that people are interested in these stories. And that some documentary makers like Senna and so forth have paved the way, and Netflix, it has to be said also, have paved the way for expanding the storytelling of sport. And I would say you've got to watch Simon's one about the cricket. What's it called? The Edge. Is it The Edge? No, it's another one. Greatest Game. Sorry. I mean, I watch sport documentaries on flights, and I'm often kind of the hostess will come along and give me my food, and there'll be tears rolling down my eyes, you know, around my face, because I just love these stories. They're brilliant, and so the storytelling is now a new era, I think, of going into sport and telling the other side of the story.
I think that's a really good point. I don't think you need to be a fan of the sport to enjoy the film. So whatever it is, if the storytelling is good and the story itself is interesting and the characters are, I don't think you need to be a cricket fan or a motorsport fan to enjoy these things. It's the human story, isn't it? And we can all relate to that, whatever the sport is.
And James makes a really good point, actually, with regards to Formula One. We are so lucky that Formula One really helped us and got behind this. So Ian Holmes and Holly Boyd there, they know that the archive is X, but they knew that this was a low budget film that was kind of an independent thing. But you compare it with what we're trying to do with our Jonah Lomu film, where we've got a lot of home archive, but rugby and a lot of his career, a little bits of his career were in the mid 90s, and rugby was not a professional sport. But Formula One has always filmed everything and anything and everything in and around. So there's so much good source material that that the editor, Cynthia and Alex, they just got so deep into to 94 to 96 that they just had masses and masses of materials. And that was one of the key challenges, is that how do you distill all this? How do you get it down to making, and what do you cut? I mean, at one stage we had a 22 minute section of Imola in 94, and we're like, well, you know, we've got to be brutal about this. We've got to take it right back down and tell it from Damon's perspective, because Senna had covered that day so well. And so we had to really, really, really be brutal in the edit. And that's half the problem, is there's so much. You could have made a 2.5 hour film and it would still be interesting to the Formula One fans. But I think it's just making sure it's succinct and gets to the point. That's the key.
I think that brevity is important. I mean, I think it's possible. Everyone wants to tell everything. And as you know, as writers, you know, you've only got a small slot in the magazine or whatever it is you're writing, you have to leave stuff out. And that is the hardest, that is really the art, is to say, okay, let's leave out the extraneous. What is at the heart of this? And so that's the brilliance, I think, of, and as you said, Simon, it's hard to make that decision. Some stuff has to go on the cutting room floor, but for the sake of the story, and which is great for me, because actually, I mean, there is Hill Part 2, which is what I did next. after winning the World Championship. Maybe not quite as interesting, but anyway.
You're listening to the James Allen on F1 podcast, part of the Autosport Podcast Network. For the latest from our reporters at the racetrack during F1 weekends, head to the Autosport F1 channel.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions, actually, Damon. I thought we might do it at the end, but I mean, obviously, it does finish in 1996. And I watched it with a very much a Damon Hill fan. And he was like, well, what about Spa 98?
Yeah, I see.
Oh, I don't know. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So not that was the only highlight, of course, but that's the one that obviously comes to people's minds. So why was that then? I mean, there was a point where you sort of say that you're trying to shake off I want to do it for Dad, or to replace Dad, or to match up to him, and you kind of realise you had to get away and, like, no, actually I'm my own man, and then that kind of tied in quite nicely with the 1996 title. So was it more from a storytelling perspective that you stopped in 96, or was it because you kind of felt like, you know, is there a part of you that wished you had stopped at the end of 96 in a sort of a Nico Rosberg drop the mic and walk away sort
well,
of
that, way? That's an interesting, because I do get that question now, but I think Simon should answer the question as to why the film stopped in 96.
I for all obvious storytelling reasons, and that's, you know, that's down to Alex as much, the director and the whole of the team, and we took a period of time and we decided to tell that part of the story. And as much as, of course, the win with Jordan was a huge part afterwards, and we could have gone into depth about what happened to to Damon afterwards and tried to process everything that happened. Because as you said, the grief that you had, it was, this was this a sticking plaster, you know, after your father's death? Was it about, you know, it was all about, we've talked so often, haven't we, Damon, about you've had therapy and you've learned about, everything's been a journey to understand your father even better. And you did that, but you probably did it after you'd stopped racing as opposed to whilst you were racing.
Yeah, that's basically another story. But I think we'd, you know, that's what the book was about a little bit. But the film, I think, sets up beautifully, and the ending in 96 is a natural climax. You know, it actually is a positive ending. I call it a kind of a weepy with a happy ending. So to bring your Kleenex and you know, some popcorn.
Yeah, the spoilers. Thankfully, it's all been done and it's all been written about, and you can see on Wikipedia, and it's been on every single F1 review. But it's about context, I think. And as you said, James, right at the start, it goes back to that. You know, as a storyteller, what's the natural conclusion? That's the natural conclusion. That's the natural end point for a viewer who wants to understand the essence of Damon's story. I think.
Murray might have had a lot to do with it as well, Simon.
Yeah, he did. So yes, he did.
The famous last words are kind of, people who know Formula One are very familiar with that. But we're hoping that people, that the larger audience out there, the new Netflix people, the people in America who are just discovering F1, will respond to that in the way that that it was intended by the late, great, much loved, much missed Murray.
Yeah, I was just saying, it's fine. We interviewed Murray for this, by the way. This was a long time ago. So we interviewed him right at the start of this process. We also sent Damon across to the Indy 500 when Fernando Alonso was in it. Because at that stage, before we'd actually started, we were in pre-production, before we'd identified a director, before we'd got finance, we thought we'd pick up a few. And obviously we knew that Murray was, you know, was not getting any younger, and we wanted to make sure that we'd interviewed the great man about it. But in the end, he existed better as a voice in archive and a voice as we remember him from that period. And I think taking him out and making him as a talking head would have been, it just would have jarred with what was happening and how we put the film together with Alex. And Alex is, he was one that made that decision. However, we do still have that interview, and hopefully we might release a little bit of that, because I think it's one of the last interviews that he recorded. And Damon and him spent a lovely day together. And actually, you were supposed to be interviewing him, and he ended up interviewing you.
He took on his natural role. So very much, you know, a huge part of the sport for us in the UK, isn't he, Murray? And, you know, around the world, actually. But I think maybe the new audience perhaps are not familiar with him. But
so I was saying, the timing here is perfect, because the F1 movie has just come out. I went to see it in the UK premiere the other night in London. We reviewed it on last week's podcast. I have to say, I really enjoyed it. But what struck me when I watched that, having watched your film, the documentary film, is that Brad Pitt's character, Sonny Hayes, is an underdog story. Now, he talks in interviews, Brad Pitt, about, you know, they obviously based it on your friend, Martin Donnelly, who had that terrible accident at Jerez. And they kind of, that's the comeback that Brad Pitt sort of makes from having that accident. And they use that footage of Martin's terrible accident. But on the underdog thing, I mean, your story is an underdog story, as Simon mentioned earlier on. I want to know, why do you think we love an underdog so much? And what does it feel like to be one?
You're asking me, not Simon.
Yeah. Well, Simon's not really an underdog. Yeah. He's an alpha male.
I don't know if it's unique to the British at all. I think that people do like to know, they want to support someone at least is trying, you know, someone who shows they really want to do it and they want to succeed. And then there's more perhaps rejoicing in heaven when they do succeed. But yeah, I think that storyline is more interesting. You know, someone, you know, a brilliant person, good at everything, wins everything, is not a great story. Even though we'd all love to be that person, you know? But I mean, it is less interesting than the bumps in the road, you know, and the circuitous route you take to get to the top. You know, I mean, let's say the Sherpa the other day that brought down this person who was dying on Everest. You know, that's the story. The guy carried him down on his back. You know, he's been up and down Everest, I don't know how many times. Not interested. How many people have been to the top of Everest? We're not interested. But this guy carried someone down who was going to die. You know, so that's, is that an underdog story? I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's human spirit, isn't it? It's the resilience. And all these things with sport is that it's artificial. We create these artificial challenges and we need challenges. I always think it's a bit like a cat. You know, a cat goes and brings you a mouse and it's leaves it on the doorstep and go, and you're going, why'd you do that? And the cat go, I don't know. I just got to do it. You know, I've just got to do it. And then we're like that. You know, humans have come from a long way back having to fight to survive. And I think we don't have that fight to survive experience. Then we've got something missing. So we create them and we create sport to give us those challenges. It's just that is a show. It's a challenge show, if you want to call it that. You know, who's going to really cry if someone doesn't become world champion? You know, it's not important, you know, but we make it important. We invest ourselves in the story and then we're hooked. There's so many other more worthy stories, let's say, but they're called news and the news is not so uplifting, perhaps, you know.
But your story sort of transcends that, doesn't it? Because on the one hand, you said that F1 in particular kind of exposes your faults, if you like, your flaws. And you weren't one of those people that just found it all easy like Michael. But you were the one that picked up Williams in 1994 after something that really is real, like the death of a driver. So you've obviously got the steely... You found somewhere in there that steely determination.
I always think... I like the scene... in the Battle of Britain, when the German ambassador goes to see Ralph Richardson, who's the British ambassador in Switzerland, I think. And he says, right, Britain's going to surrender. And Ralph Richardson goes, good day, sir. And he kind of sees him out of his office. And then he turns to his wife and he says, he says something along the lines of, not until you're marching up Whitehall or something like that. Good day. Off he goes, sends him packing. And then he turns to his wife and he goes, it's unforgivable. It's unforgivable. And you think he's going to say, you know, what the Nazis are going to do. And actually turns to him and says, I lost my temper. That's the regret, was that he actually lost his temper. And, you know, I do think those stoic kind of attributes are very... very British, and I think that, you know, it's something to be admired. I think that if you can say no when someone wants to push you around, and you go, okay, no, we're not doing that. Then you get your answer is to win. You know, you don't go out to trip them up or, you know, punch them in the face or something. You just go, okay, the only answer to this is I'm going to win, and that's really what I think. That's my take on competition anyway.
Yeah, I think there's also quite a unique Britishness about the underdog, isn't there? Like we're very good at chopping people down, the tall poppy syndrome in the UK, whereas let's say in the States they just celebrate the three-peat, the five-peat, the nine-peat, or whatever you want to call it in sports. Whereas, you know, we're like, did they win again? Oh, great. We want the next person to come along. Yeah, and I think that is... Because we get bored easily. But
yeah, I mean, we love the story of how when Julius Caesar comes to Britain, he's met by a load of filthy people with blue faces going, like, go away. You know, that defines us. We'd much rather be that than the Roman Empire. But anyway.
Yeah.
The difference between Sonny Hayes and Damon's story is that Sonny comes through thanks to teamwork. And that's very much at the heart of that story. Whereas the narrative of your Phil Simon is that you feel that Williams didn't really back Damon in those 3 years that he was fighting for the world championship. And I was very interested in that line of storytelling that you teased out there. Tell us about that.
Well, that's, I mean, again, the final decisions on these rest, and I have always made sure that we give the director the final decision on how he wants to tell the movie. Obviously, everything is a little bit by committee and we have the conversations as a production team. But Alex, he recognised it quite early, actually, and I think Damon will be able to speak to this, is that you know, you have the antagonist in the form of Michael Schumacher for 94 and 95, and that he really got under your skin, and he was the villain of the piece, if you like. And I think he's done a job of portraying that, hopefully in a very respectful way as well. But obviously, Michael was a brutal racer, and he took no prisoners, as we saw at Adelaide in 94, and we saw on occasions in 95 as well, on many occasions in 95. But there was also the fact, again, and Damon, you can speak to it, that Patrick and Frank potentially were always looking to the next person. After you had the difficult year in 95, was it their minds were kind of made up that they wanted to move on, or was it this move to bring in Frentzen because they were targeting, you know, BMW engines a bit further down the line, all of this kind of stuff? It felt like you were being challenged from within as well as without. And I think that was kind of you understand it when you look at all of the footage, and when they looked at all the footage in the edit suite, it comes through. There are a number of occasions where you weren't getting the backing of those above you, but ultimately it is still a very, it's a big part of Williams' history, and you got there in the end. But were they always pulling together for you?
Yeah, no, you're asking me,
a rhetorical question, really. But
it's a rhetorical question. But I mean, yeah, James asked that question. Yeah, and the whole story of the challenge within the team as a driver. Yes, I didn't feel supported. I don't think they did support me, and I go into that in the film. But I also say, you know, I think I've said this in the film, that, you know, what were they expected to do? They were thrown into a terrible situation with the loss of Ayrton. They thought they had their key man, and that, you know, I came on board as a test driver, elevated into number two place against Alan Prost, and so suddenly I'm thrown in, but I happen to have the points necessary to challenge Michael for the championship, and nobody knew what my form would be. So, I mean, I pulled my socks up and I nearly got there. And then 95 was a bit of I overreached myself a little bit and got in a bit of a tangle. And I think they probably thought he hasn't got what it takes. So they probably made plans. I understand the politics, and that we do touch on that in the film and explain it, but nevertheless, I think they felt regret, both Patrick and Frank, that they didn't keep me on for the following year, 97. And they also lost Adrian, who was very upset not to know that they decided to change drivers when he was led to believe that he would be involved in that decision. So it really created a crack, a rift in the team a little bit. They lost Adrian as well. So, you know... that's a part of the history, but you know, James and Kevin, you both know this sport. Decisions are made because the big pieces need to move, the tectonic plates need to move. And when Michael came on the scene, suddenly Germany became a massive part of the equation. All the TV revenue, Bernie was very keen on it. You could see the numbers with Michael, the rise of Michael. So suddenly the German manufacturers as well were also a factor. So, you know, these things are influencing the decisions of team principals. Naturally, they have to look to see where the way forward is, you know, and where the future is. And you've got Alan retired. There were some French drivers, but I think Renault would basically probably want to get out. I can't remember. Did they stay long after that? I don't know. They stay for a year or two.
Georgie says that in the film that when she met you, you would be larking around. I think she's talking about, as she's saying it, there's some archive of a home video of you kind of juggling with oranges or something at a party. But at the same time, that you were one of the saddest people that she'd ever met. Now you're in your mid-60s with all of your achievements, Damon, you know, world champion racing driver, long marriage, fantastic family. Are you happy now?
No, I'm not. I'm happy now. Oh, yeah. I'm content. I think the goal is to find contentment. And that comes about through understanding how life really works. You know, if people want to be happy all the time, they're going to be probably end up in a mental institute. You know, I mean, it just can't happen. It's the things that make you unhappy. There should be. And the question is whether or not you can ride those experiences out and realize that it won't hopefully always be like that, and then you go through cycles. So contentment, I would say I'm increasingly angry. There's lots of things to be angry about. There's bugger all I can do about them, a lot of them, but you know, it does infuriate me watching the world in the state it's in, but what can we do? And so yeah, you just have to get to a point where you have processed stuff. And I think that was all pre this film. I had already been through all that process, and I did a lot of therapy because I liked to, rather than be a miserable bugger, you know, telling my friends about all my sorrows, you know, it's quite good to go and dump it all in a room with a therapist and then walk out and go, okay, well, I get that now. And it's worth doing. And I think if more world leaders did therapy, perhaps the world would be a more peaceful place.
I watched the film with my wife, Pip, who you know, Damon, and she loved it. And she was saying that you should ask him what he considers to be his greatest achievement. Is it his world championship and things like that trophy on the mantelpiece I can see behind you? Or is it when you walk out and you, together with your family, what's your greatest achievement?
I don't know what that is. Oh, that's a lifetime achievement award from the RSC, I think. Okay. Sport UK. what did you say? That's not the world championship trophy. It's just another one. I think that much more important to have a family who are reasonably well balanced and able to cope with life, and also we have fun together. I think that's important. I mean, we argue a lot, we talk a lot, we're very energetic as a family, and we've got lots of different points of view. So, and we all. Also, recently, we've very much rallied around Oliver. He's had a bit of a brutal operation. He's had twin hip operations. So he's had two new hips had to be put in because his Down syndrome meant that his hip design wasn't very good. And so he was getting arthritis. So he had to have this big operation. So he's recovering from that. So everyone's been marvellous about that. And you realise what is really important. I mean, those are the things that are the most important of all, I think. You know, you've got to kind of get, if you've got a family and you're doing something like Formula One, it is a juggle, because something, you're going to put pressure on those things like a family. And everyone experiences that, you know, we don't want to have to go to work, or Jaime's away from his home a lot, you know, traveling, but that's his job. And, you know, you want to be there the whole time for your kids. In my case, and in my dad's case, you know, he used to leave home and we didn't know whether we'd see him again, or his wife didn't, you know, my mum, and those stresses were huge. And we go into that a little bit on the film. And in my case, yes, we lost Roland and Ayrton, my teammate. I'd also lost other teammates. And as you mentioned, Martin Donnelly and Johnny Herbert, all of these guys had massive near fatal accidents. And so it was dangerous. And to have a family while you're racing is, Enzo said it was, you know, you're a second a lap slower. Well, you know, I think we have to do is you have to drive with a little bit more circumspection, perhaps. But there are times when you go beyond that. And I think that's where it gets really challenging, because, you know, I made a rule when I was racing, I'm not going to put myself in a position where my life is at risk. But in some situations, I had to go beyond where that safety zone was in order to beat, let's say, Michael Schumacher. So the experience was uncomfortable. Maybe when you don't have kids, it's easier to do it. But I made myself a rule to get out in one piece. You know, I didn't want to go back. I didn't want my kids to go through what I'd gone through with the loss of my dad. But of course, my dad didn't die when he was racing. He died when he stopped racing. So that brought about a whole new worry, which when I stopped, I just thought, oh, crikey, I've now got to get through the next bit. So that's sort of why I went to therapy a bit, because I was starting to have a bit of a freak out.
Well, that seems to me a very good point for us to draw this to a close. Simon, tell us about the film. When can people see it? Where can they see it?
Well, with It comes out on the 2nd of July on Sky Documentaries in the UK. We're still waiting to have it distributed in other territories around the world. But hopefully people will enjoy what they see. As I said, I'm just hoping that it appeals to people outside of Formula One as much as inside. I hope there's enough in there for the actual Formula One fans to get their teeth into. But also, we want it to break out so that it is, as you're saying, Kevin, to your point, a family story. So, yeah, 2nd of July, Sky Documentaries. Hopefully you can all watch it there.
Well, we thoroughly enjoyed it, didn't we, Kevin?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would recommend people go and watch it. So, yes, whether you're a Damon Hill fan, Motorsport fan or not.
You don't have to be a Damon Hill fan. Yeah, you'd be a Georgie Hill fan. There seems to be a lot of those emerging. My wife
She's a real star.
She's a real star. She's had a standing ovation at the Glasgow Film Festival. So, yeah.
I love the reaction that she has when you get the facts on your archive footage.
Yeah.
And the first Williams contract.
Yeah.
What? You've got to pay for travel and accommodation. No, she, outrageous. It's brilliant.
Didn't take a second to spot that, did it?
It wasn't even off the printer. She spotted it. It's amazing.
Forget whether or not I have to obey team orders or anything like that. It's like, what? Yeah, well.
It's a wonderful, wonderful documentary, and it really does show Damon. And it's the lived experience, I think, of being a Grand Prix driver. As I said at the beginning, what an extreme life it is and what extraordinary people they are doing extraordinary things under extraordinary pressure. My thanks to Damon, Simon and to Kevin. Check out all the latest news and insights from this weekend's Austrian Grand Prix on the Autosport and Motorsport channels. And do join our fast-growing Fantasy League community. Check out motorsport.com for details. Remember to send in your comments and questions to @JamesAllen on F1 on X. My thanks to producer Dre, and thanks to you all for listening. Please click to follow, leave us a review, and tell all of your F1 mad friends about us and about the Damon Hill documentary. We'll be back with another podcast very soon.
You've been listening to the James Allen on F1 podcast, part of the Autosport Podcast Network. For the latest from our reporters at the racetrack during F1 weekends, check out the Autosport F1 channel, wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple and Spotify.